Hey, pull up a chair. It's Hacks on Tap with David Axelrod and Mike Murphy.
So this is a special edition of Hacks on Tap here at my home base, the Institute of Politics at the University of Chicago. Both these guys have been very much a part of the Institute of Politics from the beginning, and appreciate being with you guys. And the good news is 1 week after the election, we are still at large. Okay, so we feel good about that.
Speak for yourself.
I got a ticket to Portugal.
Are you wearing an ankle bracelet? You what?
I said I have a ticket to Portugal at midnight. But thank you all for coming. I haven't been in this room since I got my degree in Harry Potter studies years ago. So it's good to be back.
Is that a Milton Berle joke right there?
No. But probably the folks listening to the podcast don't necessarily understand the reference.
Yes. Well, Harry Potter, they would, yeah. I think.
It took Mike exactly 30 seconds to fuck up the thing about how you shouldn't describe things, talk about things you can't.
But anyway, we are a week after the election, and or just about, and we've had more time to pick through the rubble. So give me your top lines, both of you guys.
Please, Michael. Age before beauty, as they say.
You're screwed, future generation, but only in the short term. It's grim. I mean, I'm a right-wing nut Republican. I'm even for some of the policy stuff. But I'm not a big Trump fan. I haven't been since 1993, when I first bumped into him in New Jersey and I was working for the governor. As far as what's going on now, it's going to be a bumpy ride for a while, but this country is strong, and you get another shot in 767 days.
The midterm. Maybe.
Yeah.
No, well, I think no, so, but on. Yeah.
But all right, you start with what just happened before. We'll give the reassurance at the end, yeah. But what just happened?
Well, this is what's been different since Saturday is what's happened since
we last got together on Saturday.
We last got together on Saturday. What's gotten clearer since then is just the depth of the problem that the Democratic Party faces is much clearer to me and starker to me than it was then. And I think that we knew on Saturday that Donald Trump was likely to win the popular vote. I don't think I had really spent enough time with the numbers at that point to appreciate the inroads that he's made with non-white voters. I think there was some question about that. At that point, people were saying, yeah, he did well with Hispanics, but didn't really gain much with African-Americans. That turned out to be wrong. He didn't do as well with African-Americans as he did with Hispanics, with Latinos. But if you look at the Latino number, the African-American number, the Asian-American number, it's not an overstatement to say that at least for this election, and the question of whether this is a realigning fact that changes our politics for years to come or not is still to play for, but Trump assembled a genuine working-class, multiracial coalition, something that I think, you know, most people would have thought totally impossible in 2016, and even in 2020, though he was starting to do it in 2020, and the main thing that I cannot still quite process is that the guy who has promised the largest mass deportation in American history, 20 million undocumented immigrants he claims he's going to try to mass deport, won 45% of the Latino vote in America. And that is still just a sentence you could never have imagined saying. There's interesting reasons for that. We can talk about them, but I think it's stunning. And that is a Democratic Party that is losing 45% of Latinos to Donald Trump, losing around 12 points among African Americans, and losing. He's in mid 40s with young voters, and he's competitive with most female voters except for black females. It's not a landslide. It's really not. But it's a real indication of how weak the Democratic Party position is.
Yeah,
right now
but let me just say on the he carried Hispanic men.
Yes,
and this there is
and
there's
white women.
There's a
and
male, white women. A male cut here. Yes, and white women. But there's also some assumptions that what you're saying is the assumption that the Democratic Party made, which is that that Hispanic American voters would take that issue, that one issue,
yes.
And that would overwhelm the same concerns that other working class voters in this country had about the cost of things, and also the idea that they are somehow a culturally progressive,
or that community. they're monolithic, which they're not.
Right.
And I praise Brother Murphy here, whose line I stole.
He doesn't need encouragement.
Shamelessly, although I did credit him on Real Time on Friday night when I said that Mike said on our show the other day, we should stop calling Hispanic Americans, we should stop calling them that, we should start calling them Americans. And I think there's some truth to that. I'm not making any assumption. I'll tell you what I'm making is an assumption that there was an election last time where Joe Biden did a lot better.
Yeah, he got 65% of that vote.
As did Hillary Clinton, as did Barack Obama. And the Donald Trump, of all people, is the one who's clawed that back, given some of his rhetoric. Forgetting about mass deportation, he's made racist comments about all races, but he started his campaign with anti-Hispanic racism. It still is just there. History will write this and be like, whoa.
Let me pitch, you know, we can break in among the left-handed. Fundamentally, Trump did the best in the marketplace of votes of any Republican in 20 years. He absolutely broke the meter with Latinos, and he broke the meter with young voters under 29. So, big, big macro thing. And I would say if there's one lesson to be painfully learned here, is that those of us who look at elections, particularly in the media, tend to look at it through the postmodern mainspring of so much, which is identity. All deportation, Latinos should vote against that. However, Latino voters define themselves as Americans and feel the same economic pain. So we tend to lump people together into what group they belong to, which is often how the Democratic Party has looked at elections. That formula no longer works. This was an ejector seat election. Stuff costs too much. Inflation's killing me. Fire them all. And the real, I think, challenge, particularly for your generation, is people think so little of politics now, they think as long as it'll change the cost of eggs and the personal stuff they are legitimately interested in, they think Donald Trump fits right in.
Yeah.
They don't see politics as a shining city on the hill anymore.
Now, actually, you shouldn't just be the moderator here. We need to get you to
weigh in. No, I was waiting my turn.
Well,
I'm practicing.
You know where that'll get you.
I think we talked about a little bit about this on Saturday. If I went to the top line.
I think it was Thursday, by the way. You guys were still drunk on election. It was Saturday.
You were there, remember?
It was Saturday before the election. We picked you up off the floor and cleaned you up. Then Tuesday the election, then Thursday. Remember,
was it Thursday?
I have no idea.
They started drinking election night. I'm not sure.
I've been drunk.
They don't call us Hacks on Tap for nothing. It's
yeah.
So, look at the very top line. Only 28% of Americans said the country's on the right track. The president's approval rating was flirting with 40. 2/3 of the country had negative ratings of the economy, and you just take those numbers alone, and you'd look at those and you'd say the incumbent party can't win. No incumbent party has ever won with numbers like that. It's kind of remarkable, actually, that the election was as close as it was, and it speaks to concerns that people had about Trump. But when you consider that they wanted to fire the administration, the fact that the vice president was part of that administration, it's like, we want to fire that administration, so why don't we put the number two person in? Didn't compute for a lot of voters, and particularly working class voters. But I've said, you know, before, this whole discussion we just had, and it's appropriate to have it, you know, here, I think, is that part of the problem for the Democratic Party is that we approach working class voters oftentimes like we are anthropologists and missionaries, and we're here to help you become more like us, and we don't listen very well and we don't understand cultural we don't honor cultural differences, and I think that there's a certain arrogance that's happened. You know, the only group in this campaign in which Kamala Harris did better than Joe Biden was among college-educated white voters. That's the only group among all of the demographic groupings, lost ground among many others, and as you point out, among some, you know, among Hispanics, among Asian voters, particularly so. There aren't that many white college-educated voters. A third of the electorate.
Yeah, let's just say that there's. It's important to both of your points, and because this is an international institution of higher learning, you know, there's one explanation for what happened, which is an explanation that is 100% true, and also I think problematic in the sense that it could lead to a kind of complacency on the part of the Democratic Party in terms of what it needs to do. But that explanation is that after a global pandemic, basically every developed and rich country in the world had an inflation
throughout
problem.
Incumbents.
Had an inflation problem. Inflation is probably the most toxic thing in all of politics over all time. It's the thing that kills incumbents. Inflation, a thing that touches everybody. Prices go up, et cetera, et cetera. And in every country, we had more elections this year than in one year ever in the history of the modern world. And in every single one of them, the in-power party has lost, whether they've been liberal, leftist, centrist, right, or conservative. Across the spectrum, all incumbents have been losing. And so on one level, it's like, well, yeah, Kamala Harris, the sitting vice president in a party that's presided over that inflation, it was not Joe Biden's fault. Didn't figure out how to talk about it in a persuasive way. But the fact that they lost is like the least surprising thing in the world.
Yeah.
The other hand, when the Democratic Party, which David, as you know better than the rest of us, because you're basically the same age as FDR, since the age of FDR, has been the party of working people in America. That is what the Democratic Party DNA is built on. When the Democratic Party is no longer the party of working people, and that is the clear takeaway from this election. Again, the politics is malleable. They can become the party of working people the next time around. But right now, the party of working people in America is the Republican Party.
Well,
and screams out of what happened on Tuesday, and that is a big fucking problem.
Well, the problem is perverse incentives, which you guys here studying economics know all about. The incentives within a Democratic primary are not aligned with the incentives to go win these votes away from the populist Republicans. And that is the battle now. It's going to be the mathematicians versus the priests in the Democratic Party. The mathematicians are going to say, we can't get arrested by anybody who's a white working class voter, particularly males. And we can't get arrested with young males. And the priests are going to say, yeah, because we're doing all this moderate shit. We ought to go to the real progressive agenda and go after the corporate overlords and the rich guys like these two, make them pay their fair share, et cetera, et cetera. And that battle is going to rage on for a while here. But it was a clear message. The problem is, in politics, in the internal world, this is true of both parties, people are good at taking any outcome and saying, well, that proves my point.
Hmm.
And the permanent argument continues. So I, as a Trump-hating right-wing nut, am actually rooting for the Democrats. I'm a mathematician. I hope they go that way. But, you know, we will see. Compounding it all is, generally, most of the time, almost all the time in recent history, the party of the new president has a rough time in the House in the first midterm, 2 years away. And so the Republicans look likely, we're still counting a lot of votes in California that come in by mail, but it is significantly more likely than not that Republicans are going to take the House. Not by a lot, probably medium, high single digits. But that means that majority is going to be very vulnerable in the midterms.
Can I just interrupt for a second?
Yeah,
I want to finish up what just happened, and then we can talk about what's likely to happen. You keep trying to push the bad memory of last Tuesday away, and
we talked about it last week.
Let me ask you this question, though. So, because Mike, by the way, what you just said totally supports my opinion. You're 100% right.
I don't know what the hell's going on. It was a joke about
what you just said, a joke we all tend to do anyway. You've already forgotten what Mike said. Like,
what's your question?
My question is this, too. There's a lot of discussion right now among your fellow Democrats about the extent to which identity politics, wokeness, and so on is what caused Harris's loss.
Yes.
And that is, there's a lot of discussion like that. At the same time, on this show and other shows like this, people pointed out correctly that Kamala Harris did not play identity politics. She rarely talked about This is
the subtext was there.
But there was not, you know, she did not tout her that she was first, would have been the first female of color president. Right. She didn't make that explicit, not like Hillary Clinton. She did not make that an explicit part of her appeal. So just how do you, what role do you think that played in her loss?
Because I don't think the campaign was not defined by the 100 days that Kamala Harris was a candidate. The campaign was defined by the way the several years before it, in some ways, and this is where I disagree with Mike, it was defined by the several decades before it. You're a Trump-loathing right-wing nut. I'm a self-loathing rich guy who actually believes that working people have been screwed for the last four decades by the changes that have happened in the economy. And I just, you know, between automation and globalization, the financial crisis, the fallout from the pandemic, I think that middle-class people feel like they've been rocked. And you look at sort of how wages have grown relative to productivity over the last 40 years, there's a pretty good case for that. So, we can haggle over solutions, but that's a real thing. So when Joe Biden goes out and argues that, you know, Bidenomics works, and when they have video of Kamala Harris saying Bidenomics works, it just says to people they have no idea what's going on out here. And, you know, so.
Well, and I'd say further to that, just to put a fine point on this, you had Kamala Harris ending her campaign. Her big speech is she's on the Washington Mall on the Ellipse.
Yeah, where she shouldn't have been.
The White House right behind her.
Yeah.
Government employees pouring in from Northern Virginia to fill out the crowd. And she spends the last 2 weeks of the campaign, and I understand why they did this, but campaigning with Liz Cheney. And look at the breadth of our coalition. We go all the way from Liz Cheney to Liz Warren and all of that, you know, democracy. And most people in the country are like, democracy has the institute, these institutions you're campaigning in front of, we hate that institution. We don't like politics. We don't like Washington. We don't like reminders of Washington. We don't think these institutions have served us well. And you're talking about all these insiders.
I said the night that they announced that they were doing her final speech on the Washington Mall that I wish she were doing it at a suburban mall, because the topic should have been sort of how people, the struggles people have in their lives.
They should have done it in Independence Hall, not with the damn White House. Everybody's furious at behind her. Hey, I'm part of that. But to your points, one, you're right. Real wages have been frozen for a long time. That equals middle-class rage. Middle-class rage turns into Donald Trump. You know, we conducted that experiment twice. Your point about wokeism, it's part of it. It's like the binding agent. But there's no Kamala Harris campaign that I believe could have won this election.
Yeah, I agree
and,
with that.
And you are correct, I agree, Johnny, that she gave a few speeches and she tried to get to the center. But the brand of the Democratic Party, particularly the brand of the wing of the party that she represented until this campaign, was the fund the cops, you know, we're talking about the trans ad, all that stuff. And those are indelible images that don't go away very easily. She was incapable, or her machinery was, but I think her too, of saying, I was wrong on fracking. I care about American jobs in Pennsylvania. Couldn't do it. Every time she answered a question, it was like a deposition. You know, at 12 o'clock on a Thursday 4 years ago, I said I was kind of okay maybe with fracking. Let's not talk about it.
Right.
So even though they didn't overtly try all the woke stuff, it's still out there. Let me just finish. Yeah. They have to ban the hyphens. If you look at Hillary's website and others, it's all groups. Left-handed Irish American former Republicans for Kamala.
That's
Eskimos
you.
Eskimos for, I know, I'm the only guy in the group, and it's friggin' lonely. That's why I keep saying, forget the therapy session, onward to victory. Sharp sticks, kill, 2 years. But bottom line is, enough with the
We're
groups
never
already. Republicans always do the big idea. MAGA, Make America Great Again. Reagan, Shining City on a Hill, the friendly version of Make America Great Again. Democrats are, which group's getting screwed and how
didn't
we're going to help you?
Did you run a campaign for a guy whose thing was hope, I believe?
Yeah.
That's a pretty
bad and change. And change. And by the way, in this election, the people who said, this was always a contest between what change was going to be. Yeah. Kamala Harris defined it as change from the era of Trump, the divisive era of Trump. and she tried to make him the incumbent in the race. Trump campaign ran a much easier campaign to run, which is your bills are too high, things cost too much, they're in charge, fire them, she's one of them. And the woke stuff, as represented by that. At the end of the day, 74% of people who said that change was the most important thing to them, who has the best chance to bring change, 74% voted for Donald Trump. Yeah. He won the change thing overwhelmingly. And by the way, one other stat here, Biden had a 40-59 approval rating in the exit polls. That's how people rated him. Among the 45% who said who gave him a poor rating, she lost. Trump got 93% of that vote. So
I think it's fair to say that I think one thing we all agree on, Donald Trump improved his performance in 92% of American counties.
And he won 83% of them last time.
And the country mm-hmm. moved 6 points to the right mm-hmm. in this election.
Yeah, here's an election.
An election that shows that kind of movement. And no, this is not a landslide.
Yeah.
Compared to Reagan, George Herbert Walker Bush, Clinton, yeah. Obama. Trump's wins by a very narrow margin compared to any of those much more impressive victories. But that shift to the right, anything that's happening like on that level, that is not a thing that Kamala Harris giving a better speech here or going on Joe Rogan or not saying a dumb thing on The View. She had an incredibly hard job to be put at the top of the ticket in August and have 107 days to define herself and to fight off Trump. That is the degree of difficulty unlike anything I've ever seen before. So it's bigger things that were driving it here. I do want to say, though, to Mike's thing. Mike, you can't ban the hyphen. Because we're going to talk about, you said no hyphens anymore. We have Republican, we're going to talk about Democrats in a little bit, backstabbing, finger pointing, blame gaming, shit talking. You need hyphens in all of those.
I just want to say,
you're going to put me out of business if I can't have a hyphen.
Hacks on Tap is not hyphenated. I just want to make that point.
Hey everyone, John Heilman here with Hacks on Tap. I'm going to talk to you about a great product that I've started using lately. It's called Lumen, the world's first handheld metabolic coach. It's a device that measures your metabolism through your breath. And on the app that it's connected to, it lets you know if you're burning fat or carbs and gives you tailored guidance to improve your nutrition, workouts, sleep, and even stress management. Turns out this whole thing about what you're burning, fat or carbs, matters a lot. All you have to do is breathe into your Lumen first thing in the morning, and you'll know what's going on with your metabolism, whether you're burning mostly fats or mostly carbs. Then Lumen gives you a personalized nutrition plan for that day based on your measurements. You can also breathe into your Lumen before and after workouts and meals, so you know exactly what's going on in your body in real time, and Lumen will give you tips on how to keep on top of your health game. Your metabolism is your body's engine. It's how your body turns the food that you eat into the fuel that keeps you going. And because your metabolism is the center of everything your body does, optimal metabolic health translates into a bunch of benefits, including, and this is a big one for a lot of us, easier weight management, improved energy levels, better fitness results, better sleep, etc. I don't even need an etc. Those are four big ones right there. Weight management, energy levels, fitness results, and better sleep. That's the quadfecta for me. Lumen gives you personalized recommendations on how to improve your metabolic health. And as I just said, your metabolic health is pretty much your health. So if you want to take the next step in improving your health, go to lumen.me. That's lumen.me/hacks. lumen.me/hacks to get 15% off your Lumen. That's lumen.me/hacks for 15% off your purchase. Thank you, Lumen, for sponsoring this episode and helping to keep me healthy.
I'll give you one. It's the only statistic you need. There are just short of 3,200 counties in America. The Democrats get all their vote from 400 of them. They're a prisoner, the 400 of them. And that's the problem.
Tell your story about the
yeah,
Trump,
yeah.
Trump
well, campaign. I want to get to
that.
First,
you
I want
to build to that.
I want to say, look at the blue states where there are significant numbers of Black voters, Hispanic voters, Asian voters, and all of them. I mean, New Jersey was won by 15 points last time. This time, Harris won by 5. California down 5 or 6 points.
Trump
New York
gained like 20 points in the Bronx.
Yeah.
And Staten Island.
So here's an interesting stat that still blows my mind. Illinois, by the way, he won by 7. Biden won by 17 points. Harris won by 9. There is a precinct in the city of Chicago that represents only the Cook County Jail. Okay.
I've been voting there for years.
Yes. Several times every election.
Several times an election.
Yeah. And that precinct voted 96% for Joe Biden in 2020.
96. That's a 9 and a 6, right?
96.
96.
There are precincts in Chicago where he got 102%. But 96%. Yeah. And in this election, Donald Trump won that precinct 49-47. These are detainees in the Cook County Jail.
These are
awaiting trial.
Prisoners voting for one of their own.
Exactly. So well, I mean, but I think that's a joke, but it's not a joke.
We need about 20 of you to go rob a liquor store and go inside to tip the midterm
election.
But
he was, you know, part of the appeal was she was a prosecutor.
Yeah.
He was a guy who had suffered the injustice of the.
Oh, yeah.
Which I
terrible.
You know, yeah, exactly. I don't think it's the same, but. And there is this campaign that was directed not just as young black men, but also at young men generally that was incredibly successful. Joe Biden won young people by 24 points, people under 29. There are a few of you here. He won them. She won them by 13, and lost young men by a point. And I want you, John Heilman, as a guy who is not that much younger than us, but is all tatted up and believes that he is. I want you to talk about.
He hasn't, but his stylist is.
I have a 12-year-old stylist. What's the question?
My question is, talk about the Trump campaign and how they used social media, how they used podcasts, how they used the means of how control communicating in the media in which young people get information now.
Well, I'll go back first just to say this about 2016, because you could see this then. It's hard to think of Trump this way because, you know, one doesn't want to acknowledge. You often call him like a feral genius.
Feral genius, yes.
You know, in 2016.
He just heard the genius part.
I'm very stable genius. In 2016, one of the most remarkable things about that campaign was Donald Trump was the candidate of the future in the sense that he was the candidate of Twitter. And Twitter was the dominant social media platform in 2016. And you had Hillary Clinton, who was, the echoes of this are so loud in this campaign. Hillary Clinton, who would not do things like go on Howard Stern. Howard Stern, who was for her, said he was for her, was anti-Trump. She was too cautious. She wouldn't go on Howard Stern. And Trump would do anything anybody asked him to do. He would do local radio. He would go on a liberal station, a conservative station. He'd do cable. He'd call in. He made himself available. He understood that in what was then a fragmented media environment, that ubiquity mattered more than anything else. You just had to be everywhere. And Trump became the most accessible presidential candidate I've ever seen. A strategy that Pete Buttigieg, for instance, tried to adopt when he ran in 2020. And now you fast forward to this race. Again, Trump, you know, everybody focused on the Joe Rogan thing, you know, 46 million YouTube viewers and God knows how many millions of people on the podcast just listening to the audio of that. But Trump was for months going on podcasts you've never heard of with some of them very MAGA, some of them not very MAGA. Theo Vaughn, someone who is not super MAGA, but there's Donald Trump out there talking about cocaine with Theo Vaughn. This went on for months.
As one
does,
yeah.
Where he was out there below the radar. Again, a thing you don't ever associate with Donald Trump, but he was kind of below the mainstream media's radar, was out there pounding these channels that have extraordinary extraordinarily large for people we've never heard of, and extraordinarily loyal audiences. And there's at least one person in the audience here who knows something about this, who I've talked about this at some length with, who said to me one day, like, there's almost no one who can get someone, a large numbers of people to listen to, just to stay in on a, tuned into something. You know, we have people constantly, apart from the fact that the media landscape is fragmented, our attention is fragmented.
Yeah.
These are these podcasters you've never heard of have people who listen to them for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and they listen intently to every single show. And that is how Donald Trump found this bond with a lot of voters, in addition to cultural affinity and other things, just persistence and ubiquity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, our 3 million listeners certainly understand.
Yeah, but they only listen to 35 seconds. As soon as Murphy makes a Milton Berle joke, they switch off.
You know, we invented podcasting, yet it got away from us. If you're a historian, this is actually interesting. Presidential campaigns are often where the next breakthrough media technology occurs. If you go back to the Civil War, Lincoln, that was the first time the federal government had the telegraph, which meant for the first time Washington could know as much about what was happening locally as the local government. And that began a 150-year trend of power moving to the feds. Then you had newspapers. They're pretty effective. You could start the Spanish-American War with a few good pictures.
Newspapers?
Once were important.
Newspaper.
Then FDR and radio. He would have been a dead duck on television, but it became a unifying force. You could talk to the whole country at once with no filter. Was the first super direct communication, no newspaper publisher in the way. Then Jack Kennedy, good hair and makeup, won a debate against the then perceived to be front runner, Richard Nixon.
5 o'clock show.
Then the internet with Barack Obama was able to organize electronically for free on the internet and raise a lot of democratized money. We had some of that in McCain 2000, but the tech wasn't ready to keep up with the appetite to give us small dollars. Now we're seeing the rise of kind of Gen 2 internet, which is audio programming and video programming that you don't need a TV network, you don't need money for advertising to distribute. So we've created these titans of
podcasts. But what you do need is to be able, yes, a
to
message,
perform.
But you need to be able to
perform.
You need to be, you need to present yourself 100%. As unscripted
100%.
And authentic. And as George Burns once said, all you need in show business to succeed is authenticity, and if you can fake that, you've got it made. You know, friends, I love a good glass of wine, or maybe two, or whatever, but I don't know diddly squat about how to find them and how to find them at a price that is reasonable. And so I've stopped wasting time walking into a grocery store or a liquor store and staring at a giant wall of wine, trying to figure out what to pick. And that's why I love our next sponsor, Naked Wines. This podcast is sponsored by Naked Wines. And Naked Wines is a subscription service that directly connects you to the world's finest independent winemakers, so you can get award-winning wine delivered straight to your door. And now with our code HACKS, you can get 6 bottles for just $39.99. Naked Wines believes that great wine is an experience, and they're all about helping you connect with your friends, family, and community over a shared bottle of wine. Turn off the noise of the outside world and uncork a bottle to celebrate the little joys in life. That alone, being with friends, is a little joy in life. So I've tried Naked Wines to see how it works, and I got to tell you, it was a revelation. I sent in my preferences, the kind of wines I enjoyed, and they picked out from a group of independent winemakers they work with a basket of wines that they sent that were really, really good. And the thing about this is you can pause or cancel the subscription at any time. So just because you've got a trip coming up doesn't mean you can't enjoy Naked Wines before or after that much needed vacation. Now's the time to join the Naked Wines community. Head to nakedwines.com/hacks and put in our code HACKS for both the code and the password for 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99 with shipping included. That's nakedwines.com/hacks and code HACKS for 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99.
And
Now you did like the early cave painting campaigns, right? That was when you—that was your first real technological breakthrough.
Yeah.
Yes.
But this is the thing
and
when it
free
comes to
bison meat for anybody who wants it. Let me just finish quickly on the tech. Let's take 10 seconds. The one thing we didn't see that I expected a lot of, and I was happy not to see it, but stay tuned, is deep fakes, really going big visually. And that's kind of the scary next thing. Plus, what
that's
AI
what,
can
that's
do.
What you say, but we are not actually here right now.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Right. I want you to
Mike,
know.
Why are you giving away our secret?
Trump had us all killed last week, so
we're bowling.
But this is the thing that you just said a second ago, which is one of these things that is true. Is that all of these new?
I said one thing that was true.
Well, no, you said. Oh. Well, I'm not saying you only said. I didn't say
right.
you only said.
Okay, all right.
But this thing of like new technologies come around, in a lot of cases, multiple candidates try to exploit them, and there's a difference. That your point about There are candidates who are really good candidates at online low-dollar fundraising, right? Bernie Sanders was great at it. Hillary Clinton, not so great. Barack Obama, great at it. In your race, Hillary Clinton, not so great. It's like Trump is like the perfect candidate for the kind of campaign that he runs, right? Yeah. And he's the kind of candidate who, as we all said, in the last 2 weeks of this race, if you had said, what is that guy trying to do while he's trying to give a blowjob to that microphone stand, you would have said, he's trying to lose the election. He's obviously trying to lose the election. And yet, that didn't hurt him, I think his behavior is so on brand and reinforces everything that he's been building towards that it actually helps him when he acts in these ways that we think are suicidal.
That said, don't try that.
Yeah, it's the perfect.
Mike, we don't have a mic stand up here. Don't worry.
They wouldn't let us have one.
It's the perfect rage screen against the system. And his authenticity is his coarseness.
Well, he's his willingness to do things that are absolutely offensive to people who eat with a fork and knife.
Shamelessness is a great virtue in America.
But I shouldn't say that because I actually don't want to mischaracterize the people's story. But I think there are a lot of people who hear politicians speak in finely manicured, familiar political phrases, and they tune it out. And they say, I thought something was going on here in the middle.
Yeah, I was serving a subpoena, you're wanted.
You ready to turn to what's going to happen next?
Yes, I was going to turn to what's going to happen next.
Or what's going on now?
Well, I mean, the thing is, we've gotten some clues from Trump, right? He's got some personnel decisions that he's made. He appointed his campaign manager, Susie Wise.
I got
Wise.
Amtrak.
Stephen Miller, Uber Alles.
Yeah.
They announced they want to announce the Amtrak thing with you on the tracks, and then they're going to back the train over.
I think that's the plan, yeah.
Yeah,
I passed.
What is, Susie Wiles. So Susie Wiles was Trump's campaign manager, a longtime Florida political operative. Her father was Pat Summerall, who was a great football broadcaster.
And ex-wife of Lanny Wiles, one of the heroic Reagan advance guys who was a legend and later became head of advance in 2000 for John S. McCain.
You don't get stuff like this anywhere else, folks.
Man, that was
So
we're in the tall grass now.
But she already has set a record for surviving 2 years as Trump's campaign manager, and she's done it by giving him the advice he needs to get by running the campaign around him while he does what he does. And by accepting that she can control what she can control and she can't control what she can't control.
I think if you look at those appointments, Susie Wiles is an appointment. She's definitely in the adult in the room category. And Wall Street and business people and the more mainstream part of the party are like, okay, like that's a positive signal. The next thing he does is he names Stephen Miller to be deputy chief of staff, which is,
You guys know who Stephen Miller is, but Stephen Miller is...
I heard a groan when I said Stephen Miller.
Yeah, no, Stephen Miller is, as he's sort of the...
People were very MAGA. Mean to him in high school.
He's not.
Now we're going to pay a price.
He's MAGA. He's all MAGA. And then you have, the guy who's going to be...
And all MAGA and very much the inspiration behind the throw all the immigrants out.
And you now have the guy who's going to be running the deportation force, who is,
former acting ICE director.
Who
so it looks like they're going to move.
Who was hardcore on this question of going? He has advocated using the military for this, really taking seriously the notion of trying to throw 20 million people out of the country in short order.
So, but it was what it does signal is they are going to try and throw a whole bunch of people out very quickly.
Yes,
I'm not sure. Actually, I'll take the contrarian side a little bit. He sends the norm. Now, the big problem is when you take a Trump job, you get two business cards, chief of staff and former chief of staff, because it can change in rapid time. But they send a normie signal with Susie, who knows how to run the trains on time, came out of the regular Republican world, then DeSantis, and now him. And then Miller, who's got lightning bolts coming out of his ears and an enemies list tattoo up and down his arm. So you wonder which one will go. He sent both signals. Now, I'll tell you something about Susie.
Wow. I don't wonder at all.
I don't either. I don't wonder about intent. I wonder about competence. Susie Wiles is a risk manager. And so she'll be arguing, the Army says they can't do it for a year. We don't have enough trucks. So they're going to try. Whether or not they can do, and also every blue state governor is going to say, "No way, we're not going to enforce it here."
Yeah.
I think the specter of overnight mass deportation is a canard.
We'll see. Yeah. I think that they think this is a conspicuous promise that they think they have to keep.
Pretty conspicuous.
And the question I have is, there are all kinds of attendant. Forget about the human dimension of this. There are all kinds of ancillary effects of trying to throw millions of people out of the country, many
undoable.
Of whom help make the country go. And so what happens when, for example, all these agricultural workers are thrown out of the country and grocery prices go up?
What happens when, if you actually tried to do this, let's be clear, 20 million people, if you actually were trying to deport 20 million people from the country in anything like a single term of presidency, you would basically have to have all of local, state, and federal law enforcement doing nothing but that full time. It's a massive undertaking is all I'm saying. I think Mike has said the thing last week, or whenever we last talked, Mike was like, what is likely to stop it in its tracks, if it's going to be stopped, is going to be, and the price of this, I'm not being cavalier about it, but I do think, some seven-year-old kid's going to get shot
killed.
In the head.
Yeah.
Some terrible shit is going to happen where the political cost of it, or the embarrassment of it, is going to be so high that they are able to walk back from it, but I do think that at least at the outset, they are going to make a big public run at it. And that's going to be very upsetting to a lot of people who, from any walk of life, when you start, you know, again, I don't want to go down the Hitler path here, but it is a fact that the first thing that Hitler did in the Third Reich was issue a mass deportation policy. Yeah. And it was done in order to create an us versus them attitude within the country, because you can't do that kind of mass deportation without having to identify your neighbor. Without having to, it turns everyone into a snitch. It's like, that guy's here illegally, that gal's here illegally. That is us versus them politics, deep in the heart of the country. Don't try to solve the migration problem at the border. Try to solve it from the center.
Yeah, it'll be interesting though. Yeah. You know, one of the things, Mike, that people said, like Hispanic voters who were interviewed said, we don't believe he's really going to do
that. Or it's not going to affect any member of my family.
Yes.
It's not going to happen to my family.
Well, he's going to try, but I used to fly around with Vice President Quayle, and we used to have a little game to see if any of the phones on Air Force Two actually worked, other than the security phone for the military. Most of them didn't. So the idea of this big government machine, all right, mass deportation, cut to the Army base, all right, the local cops won't do it, we're going to send in the 21st Division here, fall out, Sergeant, sound off, Ramirez, Gonzalez, Alcande. The U.S. military is nearly 40% of color. And we're going to send them into South L.A. to point guns at people? Good luck. California Guard even more. So they're going to try. They're going to hurt some innocent people. They're going to screw up. And the Lanny Wilds of the world, and hate to keep going back to it, but the House Republicans are going to have the majority by 7 seats, are going to freak out and say, how do we declare victory?
I think you meant Susie Wiles, not Lanny Wilds.
Susie Wiles, sorry. Okay. Freudian slip.
Yeah, no. Listen,
they're probably going to deport Lanny now. I don't know how the divorce went. Run, Lanny, run. And good luck finding him.
Two other augurings here. So anyway, we record these things and then we go back and we find out who was completely wrong.
Yeah.
And we change it in post.
And then we erase the tape.
Yeah, and then we erase it. So, that's the new media in the Trump years. You can just erase
keeps
that.
Keeps us friendly because we've all gotten burned on each other.
So the second thing that we saw was the president-elect posted yesterday that he wanted, there's a leadership fight for majority leader of the Senate. And he sent,
which is going to be Republican now, right?
Republican, yeah. And he sent out a tweet. I could read it to you, but the essence of it was that he wanted the power to make recess appointments. Recess appointments are permitted in the Constitution when the Congress is in recess. The president, to fill emergency positions, can appoint someone without confirmation. He essentially wants to use that process to avoid the confirmation process for if he feels there's going to be any controversy over his appointments. And all three, within a few hours, all three men running for leader said, yeah, fine, we're down with that. He also said that he wanted them to block every judicial appointment that the Democrats want to put through Congress between now and the end of the administration, which is kind of a typical thing. I mean, Trump pushed a whole bunch of nominations through back in 2020 and early 21. So the question is, what does that tell you about the level of resistance there's going to be? And by the way, there's a leadership battle.
Yeah,
on Wednesday. They're going to vote for leader on Wednesday.
You got three senators to replace McConnell running against Sager. You got the normie McConnell guy, Thune, who's the front runner until now, who Trump can't stand. You've got the semi-normie guy, Cornyn from Texas, who was kind of the compromise. And then you got Rick Scott from Florida, who's the pure Trump enemies list Stephen Miller candidate.
Who a lot of the senators hate.
They all hate him. He's hateable. So, but now Elon tweeted, we got to go with Scott. And Scott said, well, one thing I'll do is I don't know the word no. I'll run everybody through here. Absolutely. You know, whoever you want. And so the other two have been forced to agree with that now. I still think it won't be Scott because, you know, it's the world's biggest Rotary Club.
It's a secret ballot, which is interesting.
Yeah.
So how
don't you have to be like a human being to have this job? Because if that's the case, Rick Scott's not going to get it.
Yeah, and Bob Dole used to have a joke, you know, it's the secret ballot. I'm still trying to meet the 23 firm commitments I had for Senate finance chairman. I got 11.
Yeah.
You know, Bob.
Morris Udall, when he ran for leader, who was a Democratic congressman from Arizona, lost, and said, I want to thank the 60 members who voted for me and the other 60 who committed to. So, yeah.
Hello, Hackaroos. Mike here. Talk to you about HelloFresh. I mean, come on. You don't think we'd be selling Hello Stale, right? We're talking HelloFresh, where you, our listeners, get farm fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip those trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. And that's why it's America's number one meal kit. Now, we all know the holiday season is just around the corner, and we're all looking for ways to spend and stress less. HelloFresh makes mealtime nearly hassle-free with delicious home-delivered, chef-crafted recipes that come together quick and are less expensive than takeout. Whether you're craving hearty comfort food, trying to please those picky eaters, or looking for a calorie-smart meal plan, Axelrod, HelloFresh has all those options and more available from a rotating menu of, get this, 50 recipes to choose from every week. Step out of that recipe rut and make fun, flavorful meals without needing to hunt for specialty ingredients. And HelloFresh's pre-portioned ingredients mean less food waste. They do all the real work for you. You just put it together and make a delicious meal. That's why I signed up the one and only Donna from Minneapolis for this, and she tells me it's delicious. That's my mother-in-law, so I'm not fooling around. You know, if I send her bum meals, let's just say I will pay a heavy price. So, how do you get this stuff? It's easy. Get 10 free meals at HelloFresh.com/freehacks all together. F-R-E-E hacks, H-A-C-K-S. Now that offer is applied across 7 boxes, new subscribers only, and varies by plan. That's 10 free HelloFresh meals. Just go to HelloFresh.com/freehacks all together. America's number one meal kit, because people love it. HelloFresh.
My
Mike just mentioned the Elon Musk of it all.
Yes.
I'm curious what your thought is. Have you worked in the White House?
Pardon?
You haven't worked in the White House, have you?
Oh, hell no.
Okay.
So I stayed out of legal trouble.
The Republic is safe.
The only one who's ever been in a White House.
Yes.
Worked in the White House, that is. What's your assessment of the fact that we now learned that Elon Musk was on the call that Donald Trump made with Zelensky?
Well, I think this was really insidious because Elon Musk, his Starlink provides internet service to Ukraine.
Very helpful way. It was a turning point.
Yes, and Trump, and they need what he provides. And I think, my interpretation, and if this wasn't his intention, he can come on the show next week and tell us so. But my sense is he was sending a message to, and who knows what was actually said, but the message was, you got to come to terms here with the Russians, and Elon's not going to provide this internet service forever to you if you're going to prolong this war. That's my impression. I think it was leverage to put Elon on that call. It also, but I think the whole role of Elon Musk.
But isn't it just fucking outrageous? It freaks me the fuck out.
Well, I thought
out.
What I said yeah. kind of portrayed it as yeah, such, but.
It freaks me the fuck out.
Yeah, well, that's another way of putting it.
It's like, if you want to see a picture of oligarchy in action,
well,
this
that's
is it.
The thing.
The richest guy in the world is now like sitting in on the president-elect's phone calls with a nation that is a long-time United States ally that's under siege. Yeah. When the people he's under, this people that Zelensky's under siege from is run by Vladimir Putin, who's probably the second richest person in the world and also loves Donald Trump.
Look, they're going to run it like the boiler room in Glengarry Glen Ross. All the rules are out. That's what we're heading for. But put Elon and Trump together, I predict it won't last. They're both one-man bands, and we'll see how it goes.
You are like a font of optimism here.
Well, relative. This is the difference between Republicans and Democrats.
Oh, here we go. There's only one?
We are the stupid party. They are the neurotic party. So
I agree with that.
They're going to doomcast and worry a lot. There are going to be a lot of meetings. And God bless them for all that. We think about how do we skin the enemy around the clock.
Mike, are you telling me?
Want to project all the terror because I can't control it. Mike, what I can do is work on skinning the enemy in 766 and a half.
Let me skin
out. We got Hannibal Lecter in the room here. Yeah. Skinning the enemy.
Hannibal Lecter. How about Bobby Kennedy Jr.?
I've heard you in the past.
It's echoey.
Heard you in the past.
Yeah.
Somewhat concerned about what the ramifications of Donald Trump's election would be.
Yes.
Right. So. It's not just me doomcasting here. These are things you were saying.
Oh, I'm a doomer,
weeks
but
ago.
I'm not so worried. Well, I'm worried about everything. I'm particularly worried that Putin's going to run the table now.
Yeah.
Because he knows what's going on, and now he's got North Korean troops who can go die fighting for Russia.
I think on that point, one thing we should all recognize is that there are a lot of people in this country who tired of 20 years of war.
Absolutely.
Tired of the money that's being spent over there, who are like, enough. They don't want it anymore. So I am with you because I don't think having countries overrun other countries and empowering tyrants to do it is a good long-term policy for our security. But let's acknowledge it. So on this project of the Democratic Party, I want to close out with a discussion because I have an idea. And my idea is that this party needs savvy, strategic, aggressive leadership.
Mike Murphy?
Into who also believes in the Democratic Party.
Oh, okay.
I'm available for rent right now, but go ahead. Because we both came out with this today.
We're happy to have you, but we know your bag is packed and by the door.
I got plans for you guys later.
Here's what I would do if they said, well, what should we do? Who should lead the party? I would take Ambassador Rahm Emanuel and I would bring him back from Japan and I would appoint him chairman of the Democratic National Committee because he is the most skillful political kind of infighter in the Democratic Party. He's been a member of Congress. He's been White House Chief of Staff. He's been the mayor of Chicago. Now he's been ambassador to Japan. And he ran in 2005 and 2006 the campaign to take back the House when Democrats were trying to take back the House of Representatives. He knows how to do this, and he would be a presence in the media and so on, fearless about taking on Trump. I think that would be a really smart move.
The DNC. How many people in this room know who Rahm Emanuel is?
Well, they all do.
You're in Chicago.
How many people in this room know that Rahm Emanuel is missing half a finger?
Yeah.
How many people in this room know that Rahm Emanuel is missing half of his middle finger? Not very many.
And yet he still gets this point across.
He can give someone the bird right to their face, and it's not totally clear that he's flipping them off. It's a great asset. Trust me, he's tried that trick about 1,000 times.
I have to tell a quick Rahm story, and then I'm going to
applaud
David's
idea. Rahm with half a finger is a speech impediment.
Years ago, when he was mayor, Axe and I went to a Bulls game, the great believer here, and we were having a lot of fun. And Axe said, look, across the court, there's Rahm. And we waved, and somebody handed us binoculars, and he pointed at me and gave me the bird. So he is exactly the right guy. I pitched the same thing on Substack earlier today, so great minds think alike. But I would not make him chairman of the DNC. I would make him dictator of the DNC. Because one weakness the Dems have is, all right, let's get the campaign circle together, all 23 of us, we all must be heard. Fuck that stuff, it's war. Republicans tend to have a much narrower command, and he is exactly the right guy for that
job. You think the title would go over, though? I don't know.
Everybody's
a little ouchy about the whole dictator thing right
well,
now.
Get a dictator. A dictator.
Who was the person Rahm sent a dead fish to once?
Oh, it was Alan, Alan Seacrest,
the pollster.
Yeah. Rahm was a young White House staffer in the Clinton administration. He was probably about 26.
He was actually at the DCCC.
Oh, he was at the D-Trip then.
In the mid-80s.
He got mad at a pollster and sent him a dead fish in the mail. If you can pull that off out here, any of you guys, on your way, on your meteoric rise through your careers, if you get to a point where you're thinking, you know what? The right move now? Send a dead fish to someone.
Well, and he's been in...
Go for it.
He's been in Japan.
Because you'll end up being the ambassador of Japan.
Yeah. He's been in Japan for 4 years. Imagine how many fish he's collected. He's got plenty.
I wouldn't want to go through Rahm's luggage when he comes home.
Anyway, it's good to be here with all of you guys. I think we're
questions.
If I'm reading the time correctly, I think we're at the end of the hour.
Oh wow!
And to our regular listeners, we're going to say goodbye to you now, and we'll be back next week, and we will take your questions as per usual. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Five new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.